you know, black people in organized labor. My association with Russell, his tenacity, you know, for in his determination to open employment doors for blacks. He was a brilliant man, and he was fearless, you know.
Yeah.
And so I sort of grew, I mean, out of my association with him and working with his Victory Committee, had a lot of very bright, brilliant people there who really knew how to organize and go after what we needed, mainly jobs, you know.
That was the Negro Victory Committee?
And we built around his church, you know, the People's Independent Church is a very large church, very influential. But anyway, after we lost the battle to organize the L.A. Railway, the Victory Committee was determined that the blacks were going to be employed and integrated in all phases of employment. And so I joined the committee, you know, as a labor representative and what have you. I don't know whether the CIO was too pleased about it or not, but my position was if you were going to organize, if you're going to organize people that live in a community, you can't, you know, become alienated. You can't, you know, you have to participate in what you were doing. And I remember Phil Connolly, who was the executive secretary of the L.A. Industrial Union Council, raising hell with me about my activities in the Victory Committee, you know. And I told him the same thing. I said, well, if you want me to organize, you know, I said, in a community, I said, you simply have to, you know, participate with some of the organizational programs in the community, you know, and that's all. And I said, I feel that, you know, it's sort of a hand-in-glove thing, you know. And like I say, he raised a little hell about it because of the fact that we had gone to the employment agency, I think it was at that time, United States Employment Agency. And we got on their case about being discriminatory and handing out defense jobs, because blacks weren't being referred in large numbers. In fact, they were given the menial job in the defense industry. You see, and we know that this was discriminatory, and we needed those jobs, and we wanted to help, you know, in defense as much as anyone else, and you know, capacities other than floor sweepers and janitors and what have you, you know. And we needed the money, you know, the defense wages, and just like anybody else. And so we, the committee raised hell, and I remember at one time saying that if I threatened that, what's his name? Bert Harnish, I think that was his name. He was the area manager of the United States Department of Service. Told him, I said, if you, you know, if you persist in discriminating, you know, sending out blacks to menial jobs only, and if these defense jobs aren't given to blacks without discrimination, I'm going to appeal to the CIO, and we will get some telegrams sent to Washington. I think Slim heard about this. This is what he was really growling about, you know. But anyway, he never gave me any more trouble. I mean, he didn't complain any more about it after we had discussed it. And his only directive to me, I think, that he really wanted me to adhere to was that before I popped off anymore, before I, you know, made any commitments, you know, involving the CIO, that I cleared with him first, you know. So I said, sure, you know, and wasn't asking too much, really. got, with the Victory Committee, we got people who work in large numbers at North America, Donald Douglas, and of course, the United States Appliance Service. They control a lot of jobs. You know, I mean, they have a lot to do, I'll put it that way, with who went to these plants. And even if the plants asked for white only, they would send blacks there, because Russell told Harnish also that he was going to fly to Washington if they didn't stop the discrimination practices. And it was very shortly after that things just opened up. We had a demonstration there shortly after that. I think it was the following Monday, if I'm not mistaken, after that meeting with the United States Employment Service. And that was in reaction to the Harnish thing. Well, he didn't feel that blacks really could be considered as a reliable labor pool for defense work, you know, and or words to that effect. And Russell was very incensed over this, and he told his congregation, I attended that service, what Harnish had said. In other words, like, well, we didn't know that blacks were really interested in defense jobs, you know. And, boy, they jammed that place that following Monday or Tuesday or whatever. They had to close the place now.
What year was that?
I think that was in 41. Kind of part of 41.
That was after the FEPC ruling?
What? No, I think that was slightly before, because I think there was something on the books, the law books somewhere. It was the law in effect that governed the manner in which United States Employment Service agencies hired people they were not to discriminate. It could have been after 8802, the executive order that set up the employment practice, but I think that really was a little ahead of 8802. But whatever,
did A. Philip Randolph's March on Washington movement have any effect here in Los Angeles in this regard?
Frankly, I don't think so. Huh? I don't recall it having too much of an effect. At that time, I prior to this March on Washington, I didn't really have too much respect for A. Philip Randolph. I had an attitude, very opinionated, I guess I still am, that anybody that was anything in the FFL was an Uncle Tom, you know, because of my, you know, you can understand, you know. So, but I became very respectful of the man, you know, after this, and he was trying about as hard as he could, and he did about as much as any black man could, I feel, under the circumstances, you know, as an officer, national officer in the FFL.
But everything that was happening in Los Angeles was pretty independent of what he was doing.
Oh, yeah. It happened as a result, more of a result of the Victory Committee than any other. They even called, challenged the Board of Education, because they were establishing defense training schools. And they weren't putting any in the black community. And they had a thing going, organized labor and management. And it was simply that you go to a defense plant and they would say, well, are you a member of the union? You know, and you'd go to the union, they said, well, do you have any skills? You know, or if they would ask you that, and they say, well, you have to have a job first. Well, if you were skilled, we would hire you, but, you know, where were black people going to get these skills, you know? Skilled handling a broom, pushing a broom or something like that, or washing windows or scrubbing floors. But you know, we didn't have those skills. So
No training programs.
And unions weren't good. Very few of us were members of craft unions. You know, and they kept it a close thing. Their friends came in, if they were predominantly white, which they certainly were, their friends came in, or members of the families came in. And they came in as apprentices, and not just as friends, and they introduced these jobs. And we had a hell of a time. So we saw an opportunity, you know, through the war effort, through World War II, an effort to train people to get in and become trained and get a better shot at some of these jobs. And this is what Russell, the Victory Committee, was really determined to do. And we realized that the big bottleneck was training, and that as long as they did not place these training centers in the black community, our chances of getting trained were going to be very slim. And so the Board of Education, they were very hostile to the idea, and they told Russell that he was, because he was a very emotional type of guy, and when he saw that they weren't going to move and that they were hardly paying any attention to our demands, that, you know, that they should put one, that they, we wanted one, and we had to have one. He said, well, okay. I said, look, we are not playing. He said, we will go to Washington and we will see what Washington has to say about this. Well, it worked with the... And we weren't playing. I mean, we meant just that. We were prepared to fly him and a small delegation to Washington to complain, because, frankly, the war wasn't making much sense as long as this sort of thing went on. And this was the attitude, pretty much, of most of the people who were participating in the Victory Committee.
Democracy for who?
Yeah, you know, we said, hey, you know, you want us to fight for democracy. Well, you know, you let us take our best shot. We want to do our very best. Those of us who can become skilled and make a contribution other than, you know, a sweeper, a janitor, whatever, let us do this. You know, we felt that way about my friends who were just shortly out of high school, some of them in junior college, felt this way about going to war, you know. They wanted to become aviators. I remember Maurice Page and another, Lowell Stewart, they made it into the Air Force. They weren't going to settle for, you know, going into the Army and being a bug private and going over there. They, if I'm going to go, you know, let me take my best shot. Let me do what I think I can do. You know, and I think this is, I don't think this is anything that is really unique as far as, you know, the black ethnic is concerned.
Because you had more to overcome.
Yeah, that's right. And don't say that, you know, if I'm going to go die for my country, I've got to go and die as a bootblack. You know, You know, you got to show me that this stuff is available, really available. And
would you say there was any significant anti-war feeling, that people were bitter about it? You know what I'm saying?
Well, there were. Yeah. In fact, I was. No exception. I mean, I was very bitter about it. And that's why I guess I fought like I did.
But you pretty much followed it from the angle that we should be allowed to make a contribution to the war effort, as opposed to saying, well, let's just, you know, forget the war.
Oh, no, 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 no. In spite of the bitterness of many minorities who have been people of minority identity, who have been, you know, really felt the discrimination, the effects of discrimination, and who suffered really suffered by it. They can make something about this country that makes them see the prospect of really being able to make it. And I felt it. I'm bitter. You know, I've been bitter. The struggle has been a long and bitter struggle. But as it was earlier, the same thing applies now. I still feel that, you know, black people can make, anybody can make it here. but you just have to, you have to fight like hell. We have this additional barrier, you know, to overcome racial discrimination. But even with that, you know, we feel it's, you know, it's worth the struggle. We still, you know, I feel that the country is still the greatest. It's the greatest, you know. I don't know of any other country, you know, I really don't, where, you know, opportunities are as good, or really could be as good as they are here. There's no guarantee. I mean, you know, where's the example?
That's the way the community basically felt.
I really feel this. Yeah, I really feel this. And I got into the Victory Committee. I couldn't help that because they really did a job, and the church was always Russell. The Victory Committee was always behind me, and anything I was trying to do in organized labor, anything we could do. California Eagle newspaper, it was Charlotta Bass, was a very militant, very, very aggressive, just a wonderful leader, a woman. She was a very strong person in the community. She used that newspaper. She was very pro-labor. And so what I did, I was doing, you know, as an organizer for the CIO, I did with their help, the Victory Committee, support of Mrs. Bass's newspaper, but she was very pro-CIO also. It's defunct now. She has passed. There's no more California Eagle newspaper. Where was I?
How about telling me about the FEPC hearings that you brought to Los Angeles? How that happened?
Yeah. Well, after I left the CIO, which was the latter part of 41, I went into training as a welder, and after I passed my welding tests and all, I became employed at Cal Ship. And in order to work at Cal Ship, you have to be a member of the Board of Mayors of Virginia. I guess it was a closed shop agreement. And experience number two. this was a deli. I found that the memberships, you know, were two types. If you were Caucasian, you became a member of the parent organization, which was the Boilermakers Local 92. If you were black, then you had to become a member of an auxiliary union established for blacks only. It was called Auxiliary A35. And this, of course, was a repulsive thing as far as I was concerned. I was looking for some way to turn this thing around because, you know, every day that I worked, it was just galling me, you know, and I said, this is not good. So it's it just so happened that a friend of mine who I never knew really to be a guy who was interested in, you know, race struggle, was attending meetings, and he told me I should come to the meetings, and I said, what are the meetings? He said, about 8:35, the Auxiliary Union. He said, you got to do something in there. So I made a beeline for the meeting. And shortly afterwards, I wound up as chairman of the Shipyard Workers Committee. And we started a real campaign to for equal membership in the Board of Makers Union, Local 92. And although our actual rank and file membership was not really a real large one in terms of dues being members, we did influence most of the black people who worked. you know, in the shipyards, and that was Cal Ship, Western Titan Steel, and Consolidated Shipyards, all in San Pedro, Wilmington, Harbor Airs, more or less. And that was a struggle that at times became violent. I was, while organizing and working on a job there in the shipyard, I can remember one time, while I was welding, somebody had walked up to the bulkhead that I was running a seam on at the base and put a big KKK up there. Well, I was unaware that this was being done at the time. But I remember that when I put my welding mask up, put a little breather, a lot of smoke and all, you kind of sense something, and I noticed everybody was looking over there toward me, and I said, well, what is this? And all of a sudden, I'm on spectacle of something, I'm looking around, and I happened to look up, and there was this big KKK up there. And seemed like everybody had stopped working for the moment on this particular, in this particular area on the ship. And so I was angry. I was surprised. I was shocked. And I looked around and I said, who in the hell could have done this? And then everybody was looking. So I said, the hell with it. I said, so I just went on and continued my work. And, but this is an incident I'm not forgetting. And shortly after that, there was an incident that took place. One of the fellows that was a member of our committee, his name was Tony Dorham, was involved in an incident on his job. He was a very fair-skinned person. He looked like anything but a black man. He looked like he could have been black, Spanish descent, or whatever. And they made the mistake of giving him a regular membership card. And when they discovered their mistake, they asked for the card back, and he refused to give it back to them. He said, well, you guys don't know the difference. why should it make any difference at this point when you suddenly discover, you know, so. Well, they decided they would get to him another way, so in my opinion, this is what happened. What happened really happened, but as to whether it was rigged or not, I mean, I can't really say, but in my opinion, it was rigged. They wanted his card, so one morning, he went to work. So he had taken his welding lead off of his box, his welding box. And he was usually there very early, and never had this problem before. So when he saw these other two guys over there, standing up there looking at him, they weren't welding. And he figured this, they had taken his lead off of his box, he asked for it back. And so he said, well, it doesn't belong to you, you don't own it. So he says, well, I'm going to take it back because all of these leads aren't the same. I'm used to welding with it. Tony said he'd never seen these guys before. And he had a lead welder there for quite a while. So the result of that was a brawl, and he flattened both of them out, and he had to go to jail. And in the process, I think Tony did at least 90 days, even though I feel that, it was a rigged thing. They were able to prove assault on these two guys. So this is how some of us suffer. During the course of my working there, they stick this guy on me. Again, I can't prove it. I came down off the ways one morning, and this little guy looked like a little wrestler, about this wide, shaven head, plug nose and cauliflower ears. I sensed what it was all about when he turned around. I didn't know what it was all about before, but he came down the line, and I was in line, and he proceeded to get in front of me, and he gives me one of these things, you know.
Good.
So, being young and full of whatever I thought it took, I just shoved him out of the line. I said, we're going to battle, you know, because I'm not going to go for this, you know. We got into a brawl. And the upshot of that was that I was advised by, what was he? The superintendent, his name was Tex, to take a few days off. And it seemed kind of rough. He said, there's more to this than you think it is. And whatever he meant by that, I can't ever be sure, but I had a pretty good idea. So I took the time off. And continued the organizational work, and what we really did was, I think, to bring more pressure against the Boilermakers Union than anything else, was to organize a picket line around the auxiliary union. We were determined we weren't going to pay these dues. You know, that's like paying tribute to Jim Crow discrimination. And we became very effective in the boycott, paying dues. We organized a picket line. We got not only Russell, the minister of Peace and Independent Church, to come down and walk the picket line. Another minister who was very influential, Raymond Henderson, J. Raymond Henderson, of the First Baptist Church. And I think that's on, 24th and Gilbert Avenue, something like that, somewhere in that area. And we had community support for it. And the same time we were petitioning for the Fair Employment Practice Committee to come out. And they did come out, and they held hearings. And found the Boilermakers Union, as well as the shipyard companies, guilty of discriminating. Black shipyard workers because of the discriminatory membership policy. And I guess the companies had to be involved because there was a closed shop agreement and they were saying, well, you can't work here unless you join the union. So the results of the hearings, as far as we were concerned, were great, but the Boilermakers Union more or less ignored the hearings. The order was to, the hearings said in effect that the Boilermakers Union would cease and desist from collecting dues from us as long as they would not admit us as regular members. And they would not approach us on the job or attempt to intimidate us in any way. In other words, it's hands off until you recognize the Black Shipyard workers as equal members of the union. And, but like I say, the Boilermakers Union did not agree with the committee and simply refused to take us in, and so then we went to court. And we hired the law firm of Cass Gallagher and Margolis, and which is a very, which was at that time a very competent and able
law firm.
I think they were specialists in labor law.
They were
really great, yeah. And it was right at the, it was just about at the conclusion of the arguments. Margolis, I can't think of the name, that was who was representing the shipyard workers at that time, and why can't I remember the name of this lawyer who was representing the Boilermakers? But Garrett, I think his name was Garrett, if I'm not mistaken. And Jannigan, Garrett and Jannigan. But Garrett was the person who was winding up the the arguments for the Black Makers Union. And we got a notice that a higher court had issued a decision in favor of the black shipyard workers and against the Boiler Makers Union.
In San Francisco?
Yeah, I think it was up north. It was even San Francisco or somewhere up in Oregon. And black groups up there raising hell about the same thing.
Pardon? You've been lying?
Boy, am I getting hoarse here. And, but at the same time, well, it was almost simultaneous because I think we got a decision here, locally, failing, you know, the banning, I mean, actually banning the discrimination, the racial discrimination, membership practice.